Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the following on podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman, and alongside double Ashes winner Steve Harmison, looking back at every day of the Test summer. Day two of the second Test between England and New Zealand at Edgbaston has just come to a close. Another fascinating day's play, but one which sees New Zealand firmly ahead. Plenty to discuss in the show, so let's get on with things. You're listening to Following On. So if you're listening to the podcast, you probably know by now, England were bowled out just before midday for 303. Mark Wood throwing the bat around with a wild abandon. Dan Lawrence ending up unbeaten on 81. And when Tom Latham was dismissed early on, and for those of you who listened to Harmy's prediction, by the way, yesterday, it did look like he was going to get it absolutely spot on with England going past 300 and New Zealand two down before lunch. And if the umpires had agreed with Stuart Broad and the England fielders, that's exactly what would have happened. But Devon Conway was reprieved on 22 and he went to score 80. A wicketless session in the afternoon. Will Young dropped on 7. He was last man out, out in the last over of day for 82. So New Zealand in a more than healthy position, trailing by just 74 runs on first innings. So plenty of work to be done for England. Right. Myself and Harmy, let's get on with it with Story of the Day.
Story of the Day.
So, Harmy, Story of the Day. Well, let's start first off with something that possibly could go in Moment of the Day, but there was a lot of conversation about a decision that was made that went the way of New Zealand. Devon Conway edging to third slip. Zach Crawley took what the English contingent thought was a fine catch. The umpires disagreed. The soft signal was not out, and that really gave the third umpire nowhere to go, I believe. I don't think there are too many people thinking that the on-field call should have been overturned, but where are you on that? Was that a catch by Zach Crawley, or did it bounce, essentially?
No, I thought it was a catch. I really did. I thought in real time, I was sitting behind it. We were sitting on the balcony watching it, and then when you've seen it on slow motion, the umpire gave the third umpire nowhere to go. He had to make the decision. I've got no problem with the decision. The decision that the third umpire made was correct. And it sounds contradicting because I think it was out. But when you give a soft signal, and the soft signal is it's what the umpire on the field thinks. It's like VAR. If you think it's out, you give a finger. If you don't think it's out, you give it not out. It's what you think on the field. So you've got to be 100% sure as a third umpire that he's got it wrong. And I don't think Michael Gough could overrule Richard Kettleborough by saying, I categorically believe that is wrong. You might have thought, you know what? I think he's got his fingers underneath it, but I can't be 100% sure. So you had to go with the on-field umpire. It was given, not out. So the third umpire made the right decision. I'm just not sure on the field was made, the decision was made right. I've been in that situation before, fielding that slip, ball comes in low. You know you've got, it's the same as when a bump ball. You know it's a bump ball, and you know when you get your fingers underneath it. Zach Crawley will be devastated. He'll be thinking, everything's against me in this game. I'm having a shocker a little bit with a bat. I get a catch, a good catch, diving forward, and it doesn't go my way. He must just think the world's against him. And so must England, because I thought that was a pretty legitimate catch. But hey, you made the chance. England maybe feel sorry for themselves, and New Zealand definitely benefited from it.
Yeah, absolutely. But there were more than one moment in the day. There was another moment involving a catch. Will Young being put down by Joe Root went on 7, and he went on as well. Conway went on to score 80, and Will Young was last man out for 82. So that was a punishing moment as well, not just for the team, but Ollie Stone as well, back in the side, keen to make an impression. That was in his first spell. He was bowling really nicely, was certainly giving Will Young all sorts of trouble. Again, a big moment that went against England, but you can't blame the umpires for that one.
No, you can't. You can't blame. And I think possibly Joe had a lot going on in his mind. I've not got a spinner. Am I going to have to bowl? The wind. And this is something else we haven't picked up on. The wind was hellish today. It was really, really strong. And it was a crosswind. And it was going, if you're watching from the pavilion end, it was going off your screen. It was going from left to right. So Anderson started at the opposite end from the pavilion. And you could see he wasn't comfortable. He come back to the pavilion end, which was going to take the ball away, naturally take the ball away from the left-hander. And that is a very difficult win to captain, because you've got four bowlers who want to bowl at one end. All four seamers want to bowl at one end. And if you haven't got a spinner, a recognised spinner, that can just hold the game for you. And I think that might have been in Joe's mind. But he put down a catch. He'd be kicking himself. He's thinking, I should have caught that. Ollie Stone, you know what? I thought the kid bowled really, really well. First 6-7 overs, I thought he was excellent. I thought they were all excellent. I thought England bowled brilliant. I thought there was a spell of bowling. Stuart Broad will come off and say, I've bowled 10 times worse than that and got 5 for. And he was exceptional as well. So it was a difficult chance. It was a difficult moment, at a difficult time in the game, where if he takes that, you think England could just go through, bang, bang, and get 3 or 4 wickets. And it's a completely different context in the game. But, Ollie Stone didn't get any wickets. He bowled. He got expensive in the second spell. But I thought that was searching for wickets. Sometimes as a bowler, when you're bowling quickly, ball goes to the boundary. If you're not quite there, when you're trying to just get the outside edge by bowling a little bit fuller or going with a short ball, and it just comes with experience, that does for young Stone. But he shouldn't beat himself up. I thought he bowled really, really well. But if England take that chance, it's a completely different game, because the way Broad bowled, a new batsman coming in, we've seen how Ross Taylor played. He batted beautifully, but there was a time when Stuart Broad was bowling him. I thought Ross Taylor had roller skates on. He was all over the shop. But he showed his experience and got through it. And that's a message to the England top order. Earn the right to score runs. And experienced players just showed you, not always, sixes and fours and everything's going rosy in the garden. People are allowed to bowl well at you, and he deserved to be there at the end of the day.
I mean, I love cricket. I mean, sometimes it looks impossible to get a batsman out, and then at times it looks impossible for a batsman to get the ball off the square. I mean, this is the topsy-turvy nature of the game. But, I looked at the clock. It was about 4:20, I think, and Stuart Broad was beating Ross Taylor pretty much every single delivery. And you just looked, England were 200 ahead, basically, and maybe 190. And if you'd have told me that 2.5 hours from then, the only wicket that would have fallen would have been Will Young going to the part-time off-spin of Dan Lawrence, I wouldn't have believed you. But that's exactly how this game panned out. And that's one of the reasons why I love it so much. But credit must go to New Zealand as well, because Will Young survived a pretty torrid examination at the start as well, didn't he? And he battled through. I think he'd probably played 45, 50 deliveries by the time, and he'd only scored 7 or 8. But then, as with cricket, it was a flatter pitch. The conditions eased. The batsman's mind and technique start working in harmony. The crowd just started to quieten a little bit, and it became a batsman's game again. And I think it was a fascinating day's play. So England bowled well for much of it, but it's a good track. New Zealand knew if they could just get through those tough moments, it will come back again to them. I thought they batted marvellously well, and if they do the same thing tomorrow, then they will bat England out this game.
Absolutely. I think it's been a fantastic advert for Test match cricket. Crowds back in, where the pandemic's going to kick the can down the road, and we're not going to have supporters in. And if the 21st of June comes and we get moved further down the line, this test match has been brilliant. The fans yesterday, the noise they made yesterday was ridiculous. Ollie Stone, and you mentioned it, quietened them. It did because it was New Zealand batted well. The test match standard, apart from England's top order, has been brilliant throughout this test match. New Zealand's bowled well. New Zealand's batted well. I thought England bowled very well. Broad and Anderson, fantastic. First up, Wood and Stone, Kiam. And they earned the right. And I've said this many times. I keep saying this to any young player that wants to play a sport at the highest level. You have to earn the right. And you also have to be aware that the opposition have good passages and good times in the game. The difference between the good and the great are the ones that when you're playing against somebody who has a good time in a game or a good passage in a game, you can absorb the game, you can stay in the game, you can hold it, you can not sort of fall by the wayside and then come out firing later on. And that's what New Zealand did. That's what Ross Taylor did. That's what Will Young did. We've also got to remember, we've had players and we look after players and we're trying to get the best for our IPL players to get them playing cricket again. There's no coincidence here that Stuart Broad and everybody I've spoke to, again, I was with Jonathan Trott this morning, I spoke to Ian Bell yesterday. We've had on the Cricket Collective, we've had Joe Clark, we've had a lot of people talk about how Luke Fletcher, how Stuart Broad's bowled in the last 5-6 weeks for Notts. No coincidence that the kid hits the ground running and bowls the way he did. 15 overs, 2 for 22. Absolutely magnificent. You flip that over, you've got Will Young, 2 back-to-back 100s at Durham. You've got to earn the right and you've got to be prepared, ready for test match. New Zealand have chopped and changed. The one guy that they brought in has played cricket in England and he's played some good cricket in England and he's got runs under his belt. Look at Stuart Broad, the way he's bowled. He's been magnificent. And that's no coincidence that they've both played quite a bit of cricket leading into a test match. They're up to test match standard. I think it's been a fantastic advert for test match cricket, apart from England's top order batsman.
Moment of the day.
Well, we've discussed many of the moments of the day, and we're going to discuss another moment as part of our Laugh Out Loud moment of the day. But there was also one moment towards the end of the day, which I just want to talk to you about, because Dan Lawrence, going back to what we've been talking about, start of the innings, first 20 balls, I think Brian Lara used to give to the bats, to the bowler, and then he was in. Now, Dan Lawrence, of course, is no Brian Lara, but all over the place at the start of his innings, much like Zach Crawley, much like James Bracey, but
Ross Taylor,
and quite a few of them actually, mm-hmm. but all over the place. But Ross Taylor knows his game better than Dan Lawrence, but all over the place. But as the mind and the technique started to work in harmony, the confidence started to come, all the noise probably just started to quiet and got in control and got better understanding of his spatial awareness. He grew into the innings and ended up unbeaten with 81, right? So fine knock for Dan Lawrence. But what about his bowling? As a moment of the day, and it would have been a moment in Joe Root's mind that he didn't have a frontline spinner because he himself was quite expensive, actually, when he bowled Root. Do you think that Dan Lawrence actually comes just another notch nearer the reckoning because he can actually bowl?
Yeah, if you've got these people up your sleeve, it's like, in my time, you had Paul Collingwood, and if it's not happening, you just give Collie 4 or 5 overs, bowl a few cutters. And they're good to have. If you've got the batsman who can bowl a bit and it's not going to have a detriment effect to his body, that's my worry about this four-man attack and having Joe Root bowling 13 overs, potentially bowling 30 overs in a test match. He's got a bad back. His tin tack's not great. If Joe's going to have to bowl too much, all of a sudden that might have an adverse effect on his batting. It's the same with Lawrence. If Lawrence can bowl you, one thing about Lawrence is he's a tall man, 6 foot. I would imagine he's about 6'4", 6'5", and he uses his height as an off spinner. It's like a Roger Harper type off spinner, West Indian, great West Indian off spinner. And he's 6'5", but he uses his height. He stays high, so any sort of bounce and purchase, and like we've seen with the wicket, the ball was outside off stump, miles outside off stump. And I think, I think Will Young would be disappointed that he's gone all the way out there. But because he's out there, it's just bounced a little bit, took the inside edge of the glove off the glove, and it's gone straight to Wally Pope. If you've got players like that, then it can only benefit your bowling attack because you can give your fast lads a little bit of a rest. But to have somebody full-time bowl and spin, I think that's very, very important. Where does Dan Lawrence fit in? Does he challenge now? Number three spot. Everybody knows my opinion. I think Joe Root, if he bats three, the order is easier to fit the younger players in, but it's never going to happen. So somebody's going to have to possibly bat three or challenge Zach Crawley at three. Does Pope go to three, Lawrence to five, Stokes six, where I want him because of his all-rounder, then Butler seven. But I think Dan Lawrence, the way he's played and he's conducted himself in this game and leading into the game in county cricket, got runs under his belt. I think he's saying to the selectors, look, you can't drop me here. You can't drop me. I'm 81 not out, whether he's got wickets or not. He looked very, very accomplished, very, very comfortable once he got in and got set. And we can't leave batsmen. We're only getting 300. Not consistently getting 300. If we could leave a batsman out of the top six that gets 81 of them, then we must have a decent batting unit. We haven't. So if you're getting runs, he has to stay in. Where he stays, he possibly has to challenge at number three with Zach Crawley. Is that the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? I'm not exactly sure he's meant for Test cricket at three, but if that's the only spot he's got and he wants to get a volume or a bag of runs, is going to go well in his favour.
Lol of the day.
Laugh out loud moment of the day. Well, the Kiwis weren't laughing, but Mark Wood came in and you were there. Give us an idea of what the atmosphere was like at Edgbaston when Mark Wood was throwing the bat around and advancing from 16 not out overnight to 41.
It's fantastic. It was brilliant to watch. It's so frustrating from a bowler because you just, after a while, you just want to kill him. You just want to bowl at his head. So, right, I pitched it up. He's hit me for four. I bowl at the stumps. The batsman will be saying it, slipping, going, will you just bowl at the stumps? And yeah. You bowl it top of off. And well, I am, and he's hitting me for four. So I'm now going to have to try and bowl at his head, and he's uppercut him for four. There was one shot through extra cover, and I was I was standing on the balcony with Jonathan Trott, England, one of England's greatest number threes, and this shot, extra cover, and I was like applauding. Great shot, Dan Lawrence. And realised it was Mark Wood. It was a fantastic shot. It was played by a batsman. But Woody's got something with the bat. He always has, even since he was 10-year-old. He could bat. He's just a bit like Goffey. If he hits one four, he feels as though he's got to hit every ball for four. And that's why sometimes he's a bit hit or miss. But you know, don't take he's for me. He'd be a good number nine, Jack in the box. But he got the crowd going. Got the crowd going. The crowd were brilliant today, and largely down to the start that Mark Wood give them. And when he came back with the ball, it just gave him a little bit of impetus. He bowled quickly, and sometimes that happens. If you get a few runs with the bat, it gives you a bit of confidence with the ball. England needed it.
What is going to happen tomorrow?
Okay, Harmy, you were nearly absolutely bang on with your prediction for day two. England did go past 300. Mark Wood did stick around, and if that Conway catch had been gone England's way, you would have seen New Zealand two down. That's exactly what you said would happen. But of course, you'd be a very, very, very rich man if you could get it completely bang on every time, as opposed to just a very, very rich man. Okay, day three. How do you see it going?
I see England coming out bowling as well as they did yesterday and today, and they can't have that much luck go against them. An early wicket. And England could bowl, I'd be looking to bowl New Zealand out for around about 350. They have to. Conceding any more than a 45, 50 run lead, and then I think it's game over. I don't think England. If New Zealand gets somewhere near 400, so I can see England having a good blast in the morning. Broad and Anderson, overhead conditions. The only thing the weather forecast is, it's going to be boiling hot. It's going to be red hot. And if it's flat and it's red hot, if England don't get early wickets, New Zealand could bat them out of the game. But I'm going to back my boys. I'm going to back Broad and Anderson to come out strong first up. And then Wood and Stone to have a good go. Two, three, four wickets in and before lunch. And bowl New Zealand out for 350. And England be in a position. It's now or never for a few of their players. You know, Sibley got 50 at Lords. Got a start here. Burns has got a few runs. He's in a bit of nick. Crawley's desperate for some runs. So is the captain. So is Pope. They're playing for the players. Some of them are playing for their places. And when you get that, good players get to that point. I'm talking about Pope here. I'm talking about Sibley here. And I'm talking about Crawley. You know, the good players stand up, so I expect them to stand up in this second innings. If it's good weather, when the pitch is flat, the sun's shining, so England to come back strong, and it'd be around about, 160, 180 for three at the end of the day. There's my prediction.
Brilliant stuff. Well, we'll find out just how right or wrong Harmy gets it. You'll be listening to the following on podcast. Please subscribe, review on Acast via the TalkSport app, Apple Podcasts, the usual providers. We will be back following day three at Edgbaston to see just how this match continues.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.